Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we're still trying to work out why Messi didn't want to come to Brighton, in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the dust has settled on pre-season and we now prepare for battle for real as we head to Burnley. It'll be the first time that our fans have seen us away from home in the league game since a trip to Wolves in March 2020. That game ended 0-0. Just saying. So, as we kick off the new season, there's been a lot of anxiety amongst our faithful at the lack of reinforcements, particularly up front. But Graham Potter remains confident that if the right player doesn't come available, he can improve the ones he has and has described the clamour to spend some of that 50 million Ben White money as noise. One player that won't be involved this season, though, is many people's tip to be the breakthrough player this season, which was Leo Ostergaard, who has gone on loan to Stoke. Joining me today as we have a look at the runners and riders is, of course, Alan Wears, and we are delighted to welcome back the Argus's head honcho, Brian Owen. Welcome back, Brian. Now, normally when we have you on at this time of year, you're nervously looking at a laptop and like waiting to see if any transfers coming in. So, any news?
No news. I've got the laptop here just in case. I mean, nervously, I don't know. I'm not really expecting anything in the next hour. I'm maybe looking out to see the Getafe lineup coming up for Valencia. No, but you've got to have it there. I've got the emails running just in case. Yeah.
But I mean, Brian, I mean, you were listening to the press conference on Thursday, and Graham Potter described it all as noise. Obviously, there's a lot of very worried fans at this time of year. I mean, who knew that would happen? It happens every year. It's a very, very difficult situation because the club, as we know, don't do their transfer business in public.
No.
If the right player isn't available, then they're not going to do the deal.
And financially, of course, I know there's the 50 million from Ben White. I know there has been a bit of a clearing of the decks, a bit of clearing of the wage bills, not so much fees, of course, but that is against £67 million lost in the season that was cut short, and then a season without fans in the stadium, 12,000 fans for a whole season. Look, we know they will be looking around to see what they've got, see what they could get, I should say. We know that there's that interest in Darwin Nunez, but that seems to be going on and on and on, and people say bits and pieces for effect, so I'm not really sure what will be going on with that one. Haven't lost an awful lot in terms of the players who scored and created at that end of the pitch last season. I'm more intrigued by what happens at the back without Ben White, without sort of the... not just the three players there, Dunk, Webster and White, and the individual, but the sort of sum being more of the sum of their parts, if I've got that phrase right, the combinations of what it means for tactical setups and what have you. But there is angst. We did have a double page spread of supporters comments in the Argus today in our pre-season pullout, which I thought was quite reasoned. There was some concern and there was, but maybe not as quite as much as you could get, say, on some sort of social media platforms or comments on bottoms of stories. But it'll be nice to sign the goal scorer if there's one out there.
But I mean, Brian, I mean, I said in the intro there that many people were tipping Leo Ostergaard to be the next one off the rank in terms of replacements for Ben, for want of a better phrase. Now, he signed a new deal. He's gone off to Stoke, which leaves us a little bit short at the back. And, we were talking ourselves, weren't we, on Saturday about Shane Duffy. Is he going to be given another opportunity? And we were talking about the formations and the fact that without Lamptey, which we could be out without for quite some time, then we're playing the wing-backs might not suit us. And a flat back four would suit Duffy.
I don't know so much about it would suit Duffy, but I don't know if that's sort of why it happens. But I mean, Ostergaard has actually gone to play essentially the Ben White role at Stoke, hasn't he? And I don't think when we were talking last Saturday, as I was driving back from the Getafe game, that we were talking in terms of him going. So it'd be interesting to see. He's literally playing right side of a three. They played that back four at Luton and for parts at Getafe with maybe suits Veltman as well. If you haven't got the wing back, because I mean, a wing-back system was, you'd think, essential to make the most out of Lamptey. Lamptey's not around at the moment. We don't know how long for. I did the video should have gone up last night, actually, on our website. I asked Graham Potter, because straight after the Luton game, when Ben White had gone, he was asked a question, do you need to go and sign another centre-back? And he said, no, he didn't, because we've got options and different things within the squad. What I was intrigued about was when he gave that answer, was he expecting Ostergaard to stay for the season? So I did ask that question in the press conference, and the video and the story have gone online, or, you know, story in the paper as well. And he was saying he probably did. So then you start to think that doesn't leave that many options at the back. So it's going to be an intrigue. And we'll see when Lamptey comes back. That's key as well, isn't it? And how he comes back.
Yeah.
I think you have to bear in mind that, I mean, for all we're saying about, oh, we don't have anyone in for Lamptey at the moment, you have to remember that he's hardly played for us since about, what, October? So him as an option is actually a bonus rather than a concern right now. And by that, I mean, you know, there's kind of a running joke now that everyone who makes a breakthrough into the team has to do so, having had a loan spell, being brought in from Belgium and then played at right wing back just to see how they fit in. And then, of course, not everyone sort of suits that. And we'll talk about it with Getafe and Weppo, so I'm sure, a little bit later. But the whole notion of the right wing back, and I think that it's fair to say that our best performances have been when we've had the back five / back three, is that I think that there are several players who can do it. Yes, you've got an absolute magic gem in Lamptey, but to actually think that you're going to... we're replacing him at the moment. And it's not even holding the place open for him at the moment. You know, Veltman could easily, if we have a solid back three, be that right wing back. And for me, I have absolutely, you know, in fact, you know, as I said at the beginning of last season, he was actually my preference over Lamptey, no matter how well he played. So I think that he is a little bit of a red herring. So when we're back to the defenders, yes, we've got, at the moment, Duffy and Webster, fine. Shane Duffy is ready. And the times I've seen Shane Duffy play in a back three / back five, it doesn't seem to have suited him. He really did seem to struggle. So when we played against Getafe with a back four, alongside Dunk at first, and... or did he... no, Dunk came off first before that. We know that the Dunk and Duffy thing can work. And against someone like Burnley today, you can see the argument for it. But I'm not overly worried. Yes, we've lost White and we haven't retained it, and we've replaced him effectively with Shane Duffy, which is, you know, a bit chalk and cheese. But in the great scheme of things, there are always other options. And let's face it, you get that. You see Graham Potter's team lineup, and there are times when you take a look at that and you think, who on earth is playing where? And then you see the team settle down, start playing. Think, oh, this works.
Yeah, but we should also mention that as it stands, there's still 2 weeks of the window left. An awful lot can change. It's very much like buying a house, the transfer window, isn't it? It takes one. There's a chain of events. It takes one thing to move to set the rest in motion. So, you know, and come the end of the season, come at the end of August, we don't know who's going to be here and who's not. But one player that is still here is Yves Bissouma. Now, we were looking at why other clubs might not have come into him, because there was certainly a lot of noise towards the end of the season that he would be heading for Parsons New. And we were looking at the possibility, Brian, that with the Cup of Nations coming up this winter, that he might not be an option. It might be next year they'd be looking at him.
Yeah, maybe, or like the finances don't seem to impede some clubs, but they do others. I get slightly almost confused, probably shouldn't say it, about Bissouma, and I've never really nailed it down how he gets called up to Mali squads and never really seems to go. So I'm not really so sure about that. But if he does stay, and as you say, there is still time to come, there's time to go till the market closes, and we haven't really heard much about offers for him. Again, part of that defensive strategy is not just the four or the three or what have you. he's been played in that really sort of deep role. He's looked really athletic, enthusiastic, probably in the two games that I've seen in pre-season, as good as ever, if not a little bit better. So, a key part of that role with Ben White not there.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, we're going into the new season. We've got Burnley today. And
Actually, Eddie, before we do touch on the start of the season, there is actually something I specifically want to ask Brian, and it's possibly down to facts and it's possibly down to perception. Now, you've been reporting on a fair few close seasons. I actually thought that the managers originally preferred the transfer window to close before the season started. And then they get it to August again. And then they all said, oh, we prefer that as well. And you think, OK, which way do you want it? Now, that's one thing. But do you feel there within the club, never mind what the fans are saying, that there's any sense of fear or concern that they're not getting what they want, or that they're going to be short of the players that they want or need to make the next step up? Or do they feel that, or do you get the sense that it's okay if they don't get any extra targets?
Sense that is always given to us is that they're happy with what they got and it's okay with what they are. I mean, I wouldn't know the internal top level phone calls and what have you that go on. I'm sure it's quite it's a pressurized business, so I'm sure people do sort of lose patience, or there are animated discussions about what's going on and who they should get and what have you. But certainly all sort of indications that come our way are happy what they've got. I don't know if happy is the right thing, but comfortable with what they've got. And it's a two-way sort of thing as well, isn't it? Because they're looking after the now, and there is so much work, so it seems to be looking after the future, the years to come as well. So we're not in that time where we get to post deadline and we get a story about these are all the players we could have had, which used to happen a few years ago. Right. In terms of the deadline,
to happen before the end of the window.
Yeah, I think in terms of the deadline, I mean, my feeling with that was, in terms of, you know, getting the window shut before the season starts, the hope was that other countries would follow suit and would say, oh, yeah, the Premier League got it right, let's do it the same. And obviously they didn't. It was more to their advantage. So I can see why it's gone back. What you will always find with Graham Potter, whether it's talking about the transfer window, whether it's talking about five substitutes, whether it's talking about drinks breaks during the restart fixtures, is no excuses. It's sort of a positive, go with what's there. There's nothing they can do about it. Make the best of it and be positive about it. I think what he did say the other evening when asked was he thinks it's a little bit unfair on the players and their families, and to start the season in that sort of limbo. Not so much talk going around, you know, so much talk maybe about where you're going to be working, what your job's going to be, or whether you're going to be, you and your family are going to be uprooted and something like that. And he thinks it's a little bit unfair on the players to have that uncertainty once the season started. But obviously it'll help a lot of people when they see what they're missing at the first sort of couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, particularly, I mean, I don't know if any of you saw the interview that Guillaume Balague did with Leo Messi this week. And he was talking about the personal aspect of moving, and the fact that, you know, he told his kids that they were staying at Barcelona, but now they've had to uproot to go to a different country, to different schools with different languages. And that's exactly the same as it is for any player here, particularly ones with children of school age. They've got a lot, and if because of when the transfer window closed, they're going to have to move, and they've got to get their kids into a new school. And it's all very, very difficult on a personal level. So, you know, the players will want to get stuff done as sooner rather than later, don't they?
Yeah, I guess there's two ways, isn't it? There's individual cases of that little window where a team goes out and loses a couple of games, and you see the option for bringing someone in. That could work to a player's advantage, I suppose. It gives you that extra bit of time to get your deal sorted out. Whatever happens, they will always go down to the last minute, whenever that last minute will be in a lot of cases.
But the 25-man squad doesn't get announced until after the window's shut, isn't it? So, I mean, that puts an awful lot of players in the shop window. I mean, we've just seen some images from training this week. I mean, obviously we know that Duffy's been playing and Doney's been playing, but I mean, there was pictures yesterday appeared of the fact that Jurgen Locardi is here. So
he'll be. I think it was said Graham Potter was fairly clear that Malumbi is one who will be going, who seems to slip down the pecking order within the array of midfielders that Brighton have got. Locardia, hard to see him playing, isn't it? Who knows what's going to go on with him? But there's a lot of movement. You've got the Carabao Cup, I think, obviously one round to come next week. And I'm not sure if there's another round before the window closes.
We've been drawn against Cardiff in the next round.
Yeah, but I don't think the next round would fit in then, would it? Last year, I think there were two rounds before the window closed, which gave a lot of time for things to be sorted out and to players to be looked at and to have a chance to shine. People like Victor Gyökeres, for example. So there's a lot to go. To still be done, and I think there'll be a few departures on that sort of fringe player category.
There is one thing I wanted to take up with you, Brian. It's something that Graham Potter said, and I get the feeling that a few people have kind of misinterpreted what he was trying to say, and I'd be interested in your point of view on this. Is the question was asked along the lines of
expectation
to do better, and he said expectation is a strong word. Some people have read that to mean that he doesn't expect us to do well. I don't agree. What do you feel about that?
No, I think what he's saying is no guarantee, almost like a guarantees, or you've got to earn it, basically. It's not no sort of a divine right, or divine right's probably too strong, but you would think if he's doing certain things, putting certain players in certain places and getting them playing a certain way, he would expect that to work. But you can't necessarily just expect Brighton and Albion to finish in mid-table in the Premier League. There's an awful lot of work and an awful lot of things that have got to go their way and improvements to be made. So I think he wasn't saying you don't expect us to finish 10th or 11th, but he was sort of saying that it's not that straightforward. What he wasn't saying was expect us not to finish, expect us to struggle. That's not what he was saying. So I hope I made that clear. But it's not like, I think people read it too far and say, well, if he's saying don't expect us to finish in this certain place, then maybe we should expect to finish lower down. I think it's literally Graham Potter's attitude, approach on life, philosophy, the way he talks is that sort of guarded, a little bit understated, but you can be sure he's totally confident in what he's doing and what he can do with the squad that he's got there.
Yeah, I mean, it was very interesting. I don't know if you, there was an interview with Glenn Murray this week on Five Live, I think it was, and he was asked who was the best manager you've ever worked under, and bearing in mind he didn't get very much game time, he was actually saying that Graham Potter is by far the best in terms of the preparation and everything that he does behind the scenes.
Tactics as well. He was specifically mentioned the tactics and how he would actually set up and form, and I think this is possibly where a lot of us. Still, I don't say we're in awe of him, but we certainly have this sort of this missing link between us understanding football as laymen, as non, you know, UEFA badge holders. Then you've got, you know, you see certain managers playing a certain way, and some fans get bored of it because they think, oh, we just do the same thing week in, week out. I think, well, that's because that's the way they've set up to play, and you know what, it's working. I mean, you know, and I always harken back to, you know, the day that we only drew at Aston Villa, which meant we missed out on the championship title. And you had people moaning at Chris Hughton because we only play a certain way. And you think, hang on, this certain way has got us to the top division. Mm. But that's because we've watched Brighton 40-odd times that season. But with someone like Graham Potter and people higher than him who used to like him, like Pep Guardiola, you had this thing, this bridge of this unknown of, trying to you see the result of what he's trying to achieve, but to try and break it down and to try and explain what's going on, there's that kind of but he does this and he does that and not sure. And like I say, the number of times that you'll see a starting 11 line and 11 lineup announced and people saying, "Wang, we've got 26 defenders in there, what's going on?" And, you know, you see the team play and it's actually, you know, always a reasonable performance. And then we go and miss loads of chances. So, yeah, there is that kind of that sort of enigma about Graham Potter and the way that he approaches things. And like I say, the way that his interviews are carried out.
Yeah, I think as well, it's easy to underestimate the, and I probably did as well, the amount of change, the revolution, the just sheer fundamental differences that he was looking to implement. If you look at, I mean, a manager goes in and it's a season of transition. We almost say, like, cliche style, his first season. Yeah. But last season was more so. There was so much that's changed. There was more debutants last season than there was in his first season. He played what you would think was, we thought was his way of playing with the back three more last season than he did in his first season. I think it's an absolutely fundamental, so much change going on. And I mean, if people like Glenn Murray and Lewis Dunk and Bruno talking to him are being educated by Graham Potter, that's, I probably says quite a lot.
I think a lot of people's main concern isn't necessarily about the first 11, or at least I hope it's not. Because you see that, you know, people saying, oh, you know, our team's not good enough. Well, we haven't strengthened our squad, our backup squad. But with the exception of Ben White, our first 11 is largely the same. And it is the same first 11 that kept us up. Now, don't get me wrong, it's the same first 11 that could have scored a lot more goals. Mm. But even then, buying in a £30 million striker, the fellow you mentioned, Nunes, earlier, is still no guarantee.
No.
I mean, it's a good
chance. I mean, look at Newcastle and Jure Linton and other player teams, and West Ham, Sebastian Haller. These are big money signings that didn't quite work out. So, you know, we're not just going to spend the money for the sake of spending the money if it's not the right player for us.
And we can't afford, and I think the big money spending... A big money player that doesn't work out is actually far more problematic for Brighton than it is for someone like, you know, Newcastle, I think.
I think the reason why we discussed the Darwin one is because that is a confirmed interest, and that was a strong interest last year, and it's confirmed again this year. So there is sort of plenty there to go on. It is, we do know that Brighton are interested in him. We do know that they were pretty close to getting him last year, although I still think the Almeria president was perhaps using Brighton a little bit to get some money out of Benfica. But so we know that. I mean, you say there about, you know, the 11 and the backup. I don't know if it's the other way around. I think people are maybe, the squad is there. There's lots of options, lots of players of a certain sort of level. And it's the two or three, if it's that many, sort of jewels on top, which now is what is being... called for. I mean, it could still be like there are some there. And remember, we've had the exciting signings brought in, and people have been up for, you know, the last 1 or 2 years. And now either they've gone, like your handbacks, or it's like, oh, no, Mopo wasn't it. Bring the next one. But you look at Trossard, can be a piece about him in the paper today. He could be, what, you know, could he do more? You look at, oh, if Welbeck can get fit for the season, Lallana can do more than he did last season. I thought he was good. So, there's a lot, but I think that's what it is. I think the block there, the depth there, the options, they're there, especially in some areas, but it's just that little bit extra, which will make that difference. You know, there were 4 points off a record position when they last season. I think, although there were 16, there were 13 points off the drop and 4 points off the best ever position. So, it's, you know, it's sort of close, and maybe that's a frustrating thing as well, that it's within grasp, but not quite.
This is the thing though, Brian. I mean, I look at our squad as it stands now, and I look at the players in that, and I'm seeing a lot of room for improvement. I'm looking at the likes of Alexis McAllister, who we know is an outstanding player there. But we've only seen it in glimpses, and he's going to get better. Neil Maupay can get better. You've got, Lallana, Welbeck, we know what they're going to do. I mean, they can, you never stop learning till the day you die. Yeah, but I mean, Trossard, I mean, he can get better. There's a lot of room for improvement there. And I trust Graham Potter to continue their schooling.
I think what the point you're making here is, AD, is that it's an interesting point, and I happen to agree with you, is that there's two schools of thought. Is that one is that we have the players who, many of whom, you didn't use the word, but I am going to, underperformed a bit too much, and know you can get more of them. Then the other school of thought is, well, they didn't do it, so you buy in their replacements. Now, I'm of the school of thought, especially given the situation that we're in with COVID and the money losses and the fact that the club will not put itself into unnecessary hock, is that they will actually, this, they will use this kind of organic growth. They'll have what they have. We know, we all know, because there's times when we've actually been sort of, some of the football we've been playing is fizzing, we've been on fire, and even especially against the top six sides, or especially against the top six sides, is you know that those players can do it. And the issue is now is making sure they do it on a far more regular basis. And I even look at Mopay on this, and I always go back to that Arsenal goal, the one he scored in the last minute down here. Absolutely brilliant. The run off the ball was superb. And we think we don't see enough of that. You know he can do it. And I think there's probably other players that you have. I mean, you know, I get frustrated with Trossard sometimes. You know that there is a brilliant, brilliant player there sometimes who just at the wrong moment makes, you know, it's about the decision making at a given moment, Brian. So, you know, do you think that it seems to me that's the way the club is going, is to actually improve, not by spending, but from organically from within?
No, spending if the deal comes along, but no, exactly. And I think, I don't think there's any secret with that. I think that's probably what they say. And you, if Graham Potter, you know, do you think Graham Potter probably is improving players with how highly rated he is as a coach? I enjoy watching them when we saw it a little bit when the crowd got behind them against Getafe in the second half, or against that Man City game, when the hand breaks off a little bit. And that's why I like McAllister. I think AD said that there's a great Premier League player or an excellent Premier League player or whatever, I can't remember. And I'd like to think that, and I think there probably is, but I haven't been convinced yet. And he's a great example of somebody who I like. He looks forward. He tries to play attacking passes. His first thought, I think about the ball he played very early against against Man City, which led to the red card. You think about the part he played in the winning goal against Leeds. He's somebody. He's got that little bit of devil about him, that little bit of forward, that sort of penetration going forward. Somebody like that, and that's the type of football I think I enjoy watching Brighton play, with that more tempo, with that more urgency, but the technical, the movement, the passing, the invention that they've got.
But I mean, we've been saying on the show for quite a while, Al, that we think that Neil Maupay is a stadium player. He thrives off having people in the stadium and riffing off them, and let's face it, winding them up. The proof is going to be in the pudding, because the fans are going to be back, and they'll be on his back, and he'll love that, and hopefully he'll respond by scoring goals.
It's a funny one you say, isn't it? Because, when he was, and I again go back to that Arsenal game, and he was on Troll Central there. He was Outhouse Central there, and he was brilliant. And I take your point. Some players have done well without people being there. I mean, we always think of the likes of Solly March as a bit of a shrinking violet, that, you know, if he doesn't beat his sixth man by running down the wing, the people get on his back, and then his shoulders drop and the body language is awful. And yet, when they're not in the stadium, like I say, but for that injury against Liverpool, he was a contender for player of the season. So you've got you've got those two sort of either ors, you've got those two extremes. But with Maupay, I think that actually he really does just need to concentrate on that one thing and one thing only. Then his outhouser, he won't be minded. Let's get his ducks in. Let's get your ducks in a row first. Score loads of goals, then behave like a naughty boy if you really have to. Because that's what worried me. And again, we'll talk about it in a sec.
Yeah.
You know, he came on against Getafe, and I think his first train of thought was to...
We'll talk about the Getafe game very, very shortly. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. A new season and another season in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. Many thanks to Phil Shelley for his continued support. And he's given us another shirt to look at. And
It is red. It's got yellow and white diamond pinstripes. Sponsored by Panorama Center. Center spelled the American way. It's got a kind of a Sud shopping, and I think it's actually been photoshopped out, because it's probably going to give away as to who the team is as part of the sponsor there. I'm guessing that Phil's given you something horrifically Spanish, just because he always does. With that in mind, I'm going to guess it's someone from France.
It's good.
All right, so it's a bit. It's one of the quieter shirts from the 90s, it looks like. So I'm going to play mid-90s France. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, those French shirts with the massive logos on, I just love those particular Saint-Étienne ones. I mean, that's a particular personal favourite of mine. But this is not that. This is the... it's not that old, actually, Al. It's the 2011-2012 home shirt of Swiss Challenge League side FC Thun. The Challenge League is the second level of...
Is it a word or a sound effect?
I didn't hear it. It sounded like...
FC Thun.
How's it spelled?
T-H-U-N.
T-H-U-N.
Oh, Thun.
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 It's the German Sud shopping. It was Sud with an umlaut, wasn't it? Which sort of gave away one of the German nations, and that's as far as I got on that.
Anyway, the Challenge League is the second level of football in Switzerland, as is contested by 10 sides. Only the winner will be promoted to the Super League. SA Thun are from the town of Thun, roughly in the centre of Switzerland, and they are far too Germanic to have a nickname. They were formed 123 years ago, and they play their home games at the Stockhorn Arena, which uses an artificial 3G grass surface and has a capacity of 10,000. They have played many seasons in the top flight in Switzerland and reached the qualifying stages of the Champions League in 2005, as well as four UEFA League campaigns between 2011 and 2019. An interesting stat about the side, in 2017-18 season, in the Super League, FC Thun were the only team in that league that had never won the Swiss Football League. Phil's gone looking for some links to the Albion, and he sort of found one. In 2011, they played Stoke in the Europa qualifier playoff, and they lost 1-5 over two legs. And Matt Upson scored on his Stoke debut in a 4-1 win at Britannia Stadium. I forgot he played for Stoke. But something to properly link them to the Albion, and it's not Bob Booker dressed as a cuckoo clock. I give you Jimmy Townley. He played for the Albion at outside left for 9 games in 1928 and went on to manage FC Thun between 1949 and 1950. So many thanks for that, Phil. And of course, you can see that and thousands of others. Over 115,000 shirts on there now from all around the world of all sorts of designs. And... yeah, it's well worth a visit.
Can I just say that, before we move on to the next thing we're going to talk about, is that the reason that we have a sponsor for this show and have had for about the past 14 years or so, thank you very much indeed to Phil from oldfootballshirts.com, is that the nature of community radio is that we do not run on any advertising. We run entirely on donations, sponsorship and grants. And so the nature of what Phil is doing means that he effectively pays for us to go on air, because otherwise we'd have to do that. So thank you very much indeed to Phil for doing that. If, however, you'd like to help keep Radio Reverb going, this brilliant community project, just head to radioreverb.com/donate. And if you've got a couple of shekels left over from your summer holiday, then do toss them in there, because they could very much do with the money. So that's the nature of community radio, is that we don't really have a proper income of sorts. So anything you can send our way would be very much gratefully received.
Okay. If you can hear some barking in the background, that is my dog barking at a drill.
I shut my dogs out, you see, AD.
Yeah, she is outside, to be fair. I should probably go and stop her.
Even so. Now, talk of doing things quietly, we've had returning to the Albion, for the first time in quite a long time, it must be said, a fanzine. We were contacted, and I think they've made themselves known that way, that the North Stand Collective have produced a 56-page fanzine called Collective Voice, Collective with a K, Voice with a C. We were given a copy of it to have a look through, and we thoroughly recommend that if you get the option to buy it, I sure suspect it will probably be next week's home game against Watford, then do pick up a copy.
It's actually available with the NSK membership over at www.nskbxa.bigcartel.com. Membership to £10 and it includes free gifts and discounts in the store, etc. And it's a really good read. There's a brilliant interview with Corday in there, which is we always like to hear from him, and they've done a good job with it. And hopefully Anthony from the NSK will come and join us, and we'll have a chat about that. And in this day and age, you don't see him very often, do you? And they're great.
No, I would say it's the first in a long time since the Seagull Love Review closed down, and that would have been about 4 years ago. I think they did us a special one for when we did the Build a Bonfire night, which was kind of a collection of their stuff plus a Goals-Eye stuff. But that's the first time last time we had it for a long time. So it's good to see the return of the fanzine. It's got the usual sort of humour. It's got the wry look at the club and football generally. So if you get an opportunity to pick a copy up, do. Well worth a read. And like I say, hopefully we'll have someone from the NSK on the show very, very soon to come and talk about how they put it all together. Brian, fanzine, was that something you ever started on when you were Brian
Cub reporter?
No, probably before that, it was very early days, but typing and photocopying and stuff. But this is a printed, I suppose, fanzine. It's not an online, and that is so good because I mean it's quite nice to see things like that coming back. We went to the game last Saturday and were given the link to the digital program, and it's not the same as coming back with a magazine in your hand.
PDSR is collectible, Brian.
No, well, I'm not even collectible. Just chucking in a box when you get home. But we did a 24 page pull. I can't remember how many pages it was. We did a pull out for the 10th anniversary of the Amex, which seems to have gone down quite well, and we've done one for the new season. So hopefully, print has still got its that feeling of having the printed product in your hand has still got some attraction. And of course, you don't need to worry about charging your phone up, getting on the Wi-Fi, whatever, to read it. And you might need that phone charge if you've got to show your COVID pass and your ticket and what have you. So, good luck to them.
I mean, that's a good point there, Brian. I mean, obviously, with COVID and with lockdown and stuff, I mean, in terms of paper sales, I mean, they must have taken a massive dive because people weren't able to go out.
I think they'd already taken the dive. Not so much. No, I don't think they've taken as much as a hit as you would have thought. What has been harder, without giving away too many secrets, is the advertising revenue, the advertising within the newspaper. Actually selling the newspapers held pretty firm, to be honest. So how that worked, I don't know. But I've sort of seen the numbers. But obviously, yeah, digital online is the growth. That's where it all is. But for us, I think the paper is really important because people... If you went out in Brighton and asked people what the newspaper of Brighton is, I think most people would say the Argus. If you went out in Brighton and said, what is the website that covers Brighton? I don't think so many would say the argus.co.uk, although a lot would, hopefully. So, still really important. And I enjoy doing the newspapers, producing pages, designing pages and what have you. And it is sort of, and I enjoy having something to read in that, you know, something to pick up and flick through as well. So, but then I'm old.
This is a job I used to do myself. I was on the pre-press myself from 97 to 99, working from 5 o'clock in the afternoon through till 2:30 in the morning, sending the freight. In those days, the presses were actually downstairs. This is from when you were up in Coventry.
No, exactly. Yeah. I know where you are.
I'm telling our listener that, you know, that this is how it was back in those days. I've got a feeling that, was it the pre-presses are in India? Sorry, the pre-presses are in India and the presses themselves. Are they still in Weymouth or something? Or have I... How's the Argus put together?
No, it's printed over in Southampton, which is, I mean, pre-press, we do it. We do all that sort of thing. So that will be down to me. Although I'm sort of seen as the Brighton and Hove Albion reporter, I do a lot of production and it's all part of the same job. A lot of the, you know, design, sub-editing, what have you. So I can't really blame anybody else for some, if something doesn't go quite right and putting the barcode on and the race page in and what have you. But that's how it is now. Whereas you used to have different departments doing that. Maybe, by the way, we will have a new, maybe I should mention here, we will have a new base in the North Lane before too long, which we're sort of looking forward to moving to. So we will be back in town with some sort of presence.
Well, that's kind of like the Argus comes home then, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be. I don't know if I should have said that, but a little exclusive for you on that. I don't think it's any great secret, but that's what we're looking at. So at least we'll have a base and we won't all be sitting in our bedrooms and our in our gardens putting the paper together.
But talking of things that are, all things social media, through football and through the press and what have you, I mean, it may have occurred to a few of you back earlier in the year that all the Premier League and the Premier League clubs, the Football League clubs, and I think some rugby clubs and cricket clubs did it as well. The Argus did it. We did it. We had a weekend long moratorium on all social media. Refused to comment on anything from a Friday afternoon to a Monday morning, or to a Monday night, I think it was, in protest of online abuse aimed at certain people within the game, within the press. I mean, we saw it carry on horrifically after the Euros, and it just sort of carries on now. So with that in mind, I do actually want to, it's kind of more of a personal note I want to say here, that one of the founding presenters of the Albion Roar back in about 2007 and prior to that was a fabulous lady called Paula Walvoorne. Now, oddly enough, actually, it was just before we started recording this, I noticed that she was on Come Dine With Me this week, and it looks like she's had a fabulous time. But there are people out there who just cannot help themselves, who have to troll her. Now, I don't want to make a big thing about the fact that this happened, but apart from to say, just stop it. Just pack it in. You know, you have this, we've had it in football, we have it in cricket, of people, you know, even on a small level, people abusing certain individuals within the club for not signing this player, not getting that player. I've seen the words lazy and arrogant. I mean, it's not abuse, but it is an ultra criticism, which is unnecessary. But even when you get to someone who's on Come Dine With Me, a friend of ours who started this show, who Adrian and I, having done this now for 14 years, if it hadn't have been for the likes of Paula and a couple of others, we wouldn't actually have this platform. And she's a brilliant woman, and getting grief just because she was on Come Dine With Me. So whether it's football, whether it's Come Dine, whatever it is, you know, just stop it. Just stop it.
Okay. Well, let's move on to last Saturday then. And there was a game at the Amex. It wasn't the greatest. Obviously, ended up with a 2-0 defeat. I mean, pre-season friendlies at the end of the day, and it wasn't the greatest draw. But, Brian, the crowd there, I mean, it was just under 8,000. They were very, very pleased to be there. And it was just the noise as the teams came out was just quite magnificent, wasn't it?
It was good enthusiasm, wasn't there? Especially in the second half, and people, you know, I think Brighton probably fed off that a little bit. I was trying to work out, you look at the north standing, you try and work out a proportion of how full it is or what have you. It's, I said about a quarter full. I'm not sure if that was right, just from visually. But yeah, I thought there was really good enthusiasm. And before the game, there was, obviously most people have got soaking wet getting there. But when the teams came out, when Sanchez came out, who's obviously a new Brighton favourite who a lot of people haven't seen, well, nobody's seen an awful lot of. A few people have seen a little bit of. He got a really good welcome. Yeah, it was a nice feel. And as matches against La Liga teams go, about as good a workout as you're going to get before going to Burnley.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not often that you go to a match at the Amex and get the manager off the bus, Brian.
Well, there, yeah, that was... You mean afterwards? Yeah, that was... That was good. I was quite impressed. I was quite obviously Graham Potter came down and we didn't do a Zoom. We did a little a very small, very socially distanced chat with Graham Potter, about four or five reporters, and one of Michelle's assistants was out there collecting the balls or whatever. And I just thought I've got to talk to him about what he thought of Brighton and Marco Correa. Is such a sort of an obvious thing to ask a question about. And I said, so can I talk to Michel? Is he still around? And the assistant said, no, he's gone to go on the bus. So, well, not that's a shame. And he said, but if you come round, we'll get him for you. So I went back out, packed my bag straight away, went out to the entrance, just stood around sort of where the bus was parked and thought, I'll wait for him, see if I can intercept him as he's coming out. Hopefully he's not in the bus yet. And next thing, he was standing there to my left with the assistant, aforementioned assistant, and with his hand out, just ready to shake hands. It took a good bit of a double take, so he had, you know, a mask on, and it was quite a big mask. And I said, wow, he's out here. So he answered the question, firstly, what sort of a test did Brighton give? I thought I'd go in with that one first, rather than, are you going to sell your player? And he was good. He was he spoke quite well about the test they'd been given. And I said, what about Marco Correa? And he said, I expect him to stay. Look, I don't know if he was saying that for the benefit of other people who might then see the comments. I don't know if that's what's going to end up happening. I'm sure that he wants him to stay. I'm sure he's right when he says they will make an effort for him to stay. Whether he ends up staying, I don't know, but he answered the question. He said, well, you know, he was pleased Brighton have noticed him. That shows what a good player he was. And that was sort of it. It was a couple of questions. You know, it was freezing cold outside. I said, thank, honestly, said to him, thanks for coming out into the cold. And he sort of laughed because coming from Madrid at this time of year. But that was what he said. So, but the fact that he got off the bus was really, I was really pleased about. And there was another extra reason why I was pleased. He's probably one of the players I've most enjoyed watching. And I used to keep an eye on Madrid and used to go over there occasionally in the early 90s. And it is so nice to see somebody who's admired as a player from a distance, not knowing actually what they're like, to then discover that he's a sort of a very polite, gentlemanly, helpful sort of person. I think that was quite nice as well. So that game,
willing to get off the bus, Brian. This
I can't imagine that happening. I can't imagine a manager. I couldn't. Well, until then, a manager getting off the team bus to go and talk to somebody who obviously knows that you're going to ask, are you going to sell your one of your best players to Brighton? So
if he gets told it's an Englishman who wants to ask you in Spanish, then I think that maybe his interest is piqued at the very least.
Maybe it's a little bit, he knows it's not one of his sort of nemesis from the press or something like that. But obviously, yeah, it's an Englishman. But of course, I used it. I put the story out first thing on Sunday morning, then I WhatsApped it to the Marca reporter who covers Getafe, and it was out everywhere after that. So, but, and people know these things. You know, if you say something to a reporter, they know that it's going to travel like wildfire. So that's what he said. The reporter who covers Getafe said, I don't think he's right about Cucurella. I think he's going to come to Brighton. But obviously nothing much has happened with that since, that we know of. He was linked with Burnley, and Chris Bowden at the Burnley paper, who's really well informed on what's going on up there, said, no, nothing in it. I'm just waiting now to see if he's going to play for Getafe at Valencia. And Cucurella turned up at training on Tuesday with his Olympic silver medal. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yeah.
His Olympic silver medal. So, that's what it is. But yeah, I was really, like I say, really impressed with Michel. He's a sort of very classy sort of character, as he was a player. Yeah. And it's just nice when it's somebody you've liked as a player, then behaves like that. It gives you a little bit of a, you know.
Did you happen to ask him about his team's outhousery?
No, I asked him what I told you about. I asked him about, was it good? Was it a physical match? Did he think it was a physical match? But I think that might have all come from his predecessor. But because Michel is not really that sort of style, he would. And I thought they played some good football at times, and that was probably more his style. But the big man at the back, Ignacy Mikel, a player who Gus Poyet wanted to bring to Brighton back in the, what would it have been, 2012-ish, something like that, when he was a kid at Arsenal. So, and he was obviously... but like I say, that's why I thought it was a good workout.
Yeah.
Again, for a game at Burnley, if you're going to play a La Liga team in preparation to go to Burnley, to Turf Moor, that wasn't bad in the manner of what they had to attack against and in the manner of the way they conceded the first goal.
Yeah, I mean, they did force us back very, very deep in that game, didn't they? No, it didn't give us an awful lot of space to play in. And I think it is, it's a rite of passage as a Brighton player that every single player, including Neil Maupay and Rob Sanchez, has to play right back at some point.
I think so. Listen, yeah, Maupay at right wing back. You could see sort of fairly early on it wasn't going to work. Don't get me wrong, his attacking now was very good. He did like to bomb on down the wings. I just don't think he was given the service that he needed. But his defending was virtually non-existent, and I think that the rest of the back four had to cover him quite a lot. I think we're all saying it. I was next to my good friend Charlie at half time. I said, look, you know, I know that there's a consideration of whether Mwepo is going to be complementary to Bissouma or he's going to get under his feet. But you've got to see that. And so that's what happened in the second half. We play a lot better. As Brian said, we took the handbrake off and played a lot better for it. Didn't create a lot of chances, but did actually sort of get in amongst them.
We forced the keeper into a few saves, didn't we? I mean, one of which from Colin Lee, which was offside. But yeah. I mean, it was one player that did get an opportunity to come on, and he could be involved in the squad this weekend. When we were doing our breakthrough player for the season, we didn't actually, it wasn't even on the radar, I don't think. But then Rob Sanchez wasn't last year. But do you think it could be a big season for Taylor Richards, Brian?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, we've seen good touches from him, but not massively. He's very confident. At Luton, he clearly wanted to score a goal when he went on late. He's done all that he could to score that amount of goals in League One in a competitive Doncaster team. Does he make that step to the Premier League now, or does he want to play more games a la Ostergaard? I'm not sure, but he's being asked. Graham Potter is saying quite a lot about him. The reason why he's saying quite a lot about him is because he's being asked quite a lot about him. He doesn't come out and decide who he's going to talk to us about. It has to be a question. But he gets asked these questions because it's caught the reporter's eye. So if you see comments about a certain player, it's not that it's necessarily he's caught, that player has caught Graham Potter's eye and impressed him. It's because he's impressed a reporter who's then decided to ask a question about him. So, but he likes him. He's, what he said, you know, he said all good things about him. He says he brings something different. And obviously goals, you know, League One maybe, but goals.
Goals? What are they? Yeah.
Well, that's something we're hoping that Mwepu will bring as well. But what another player we were hoping that might bring us some goals is another one that he's being strongly linked with an exit. I mean, I checked my sources yesterday and they were saying, well, it's could happen, but Percy Tau, it seems to be a bit of a weird one. I mean, I think he will. I mean, he's been linked to Al Ahly in Egypt, isn't it? And it's a step down, I think, in terms of the league. I mean, he'd be a big fish in a smaller pond. He'd certainly do well over there, but I personally think he wants to stick around for at least until January, see if he gets an opportunity.
You think he wants to, or you think he should do?
I think he wants to, and I think he should do, yes.
I think he should do, having made all that commitment and all that effort to, you know, not go to the Olympics, to get his first pre-season, which is a massive thing. I spoke to him before all this came up, I should have asked him about if he was going to stay for the season. I spoke to him after the Luton game, and one of the things that he said was he came into an atmosphere which wasn't a positive sort of atmosphere, not in a bad way, but it was January. The team were playing sort of twice a week. They hadn't won many games. They were in relegation trouble. He came into that sort of
environment,
that sort of serious environment, if you like, and it had been an intense environment. And he sort of spoke about pre-season had given him time. It was a different feel about pre-season. So, I mean, look, he scored the goal against Luton in the second half. I don't know exactly who the Luton defenders were that he left in his wake, but it was a great sign, wasn't it? And it went down very well. And then, it would be disappointing to see him go. You say he's been linked; he's almost been announced by some of the media over that way. Yeah. But we'll see. You know, it's he is available for the Burnley game apparently, as things stand. But whether he'll be available for Brentford in September is probably more questionable.
But another player who's following the path set by Percy is Karu Mitoma, who's just joined us from Kawasaki Frontale. He's gone to Union Saint-Gilloise, as did Percy, because of work permit issues. But this is another player that's really highly rated and could be a big star, potentially.
Yeah, the difference is he's gone to Union Saint-Gilloise in the top flight, whereas Percy went there as a second division. I don't know how much difference that makes, but you'd think it's advantageous over what Percy did, having to play there and then step up to the top flight elsewhere. So, I mean, that's a nice advantage for Brighton with Saint-Gilloise having gone up.
And also, as I understand it, that it's only until such time as his work permit is sorted out. Now, admittedly, Percy's took ages, but as I understand it, I think that his is much likely to be a lot quicker. So it kind of gives the Albion the option of having him back in as and when. So how long, I don't know the nature of the deal with Union Saint-Gilloise as to whether the Albion can recall him at any time, or whether it's a half season or it's a season or whatever it might be.
Well, it's a season-long loan. I don't know if there's a recall option. Obviously,
that's what I'm asking. So
it's because of what he's gone there purely because of the work permit issue. And
so we'll have to see how it gets on.
I suspect you probably won't know if there's a recall option.
No, I don't. I don't know.
If he gets enough points, but it's certainly an exciting one, and you know it is a name in the door. I mean, we're hoping for a few more of those over the next couple of weeks.
It's a fine balance, Aidy. It's always been, it's a fine balance, and it's always been the case. And I think that some people are having their heads turned a little bit by the fact we've just sold someone for a club record that, that just absolutely smashes what's gone before. It's five times what has gone before. Is that also we're selling, we've sold at a time where the club frankly needed the money. Now, it's not to say we're a selling club, and Tony Bloom was in no hurry to sell. It was a case of Arsenal saying, well, you know, name your figure, and Tony coming up with something, said that, well, no, sorry, not good enough, and so on. Eventually, I'll say Arsenal called his bluff. They just matched the expectation. But it's not to say that all that 50 million, and certainly the club don't get to see the whole 50 million, it's not that 50 million that, you know, it's not the kind of figure which makes other clubs think, oh, they've got 50 million to spend, we're going to raise the bar on our player that they want. I don't think it's we're in that realm yet. If we were a Championship club that sold someone for 50 million, absolutely. But I think what I'm reading between the lines here is that the club is actually cutting its cloth accordingly. As Brian mentioned at the top of the show, and if we have Kieran Maguire back on here, you know, everyone's taken a hit. But what the club will not do is hock itself. No. It'll put itself into hock. And so, yeah, we will get. And I fully expect other players to come in, but they will be ones who will not necessarily, I'm imagining, be marquee signings of a record stature. Having said that, we both said that Kedra and Ostergaard were going to be breakthrough players. So what do we know?
Well, Kedra hasn't gone yet because he's injured, so he's still like me. So we're working on it. But Brian, I mean, it is, in terms of the rumour mill, it is just like agents talking about players. It's very similar to the fact that when Harry Maguire left Leicester for a record 80 million quid to go to Man United, Leicester automatically, obviously, going to spend 40 million on Lewis Clark, at which point it was just rumours, and I don't think there was anything solid on the table.
No, I mean, I don't think before he even went, that was the days when Andy was working with us as well. So he would be checking things and I would be checking things when he was on holiday. And it was pretty clear from Rob Tanner, who works for the Leicester Mercury and is now at the Athletic, that Leicester had Soyuncu lined up and nobody had heard of him at the time and nobody knew how to spell his name. But he was the one who was coming through. They weren't then going to go out and sign somebody else. So somehow that story kept going on. But I think it was fairly locally. I don't think I did a story on it. I might have done a tweet or two, but we were being told. So it's difficult when so many people with so many followers and such an audience are so insistently saying something. It's quite difficult to hold your nerve. But and then when you double check and you're just sometimes you're told, no, that's wrong. And it's quite surprising sometimes to hear that it's wrong because so many people are saying the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. So hopefully next week we'll have a different show with some new names to talk about. But if we don't, hopefully we'll be talking about a victory at Turf Moor in the first game of the season. New season. Are we excited? Doesn't feel like it's ever gone away. But this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM with me, Aidy Packham, with Alan Wares. Thank you to Brian Owen. We'll see you again next week.